At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Welcome to the 2023 fantasy football season. We are kicking things off this week with a divisional preview of the NFC East. Really excited to get things rolling here, get back into the swing of things. Sorry it's been a while since we've last talked, but I promise you we've been working on some things behind the scenes. And one of the reasons we haven't had a podcast for a little while is got some news right up top to get into here. I wanted to welcome Drew DeLuca, who is assuming the role of editor-in-chief at QBList going forward. I'm still going to be around. Still going to be on the podcast. I'm just taking a little step back, you know, kind of that personal life, work balance kind of thing that's always important. But I'm very excited to have Drew joining us to lead the site going forward. He's already got some awesome stuff he's working on. And just kind of a little background on Drew here. First of all, he's an Eagles fan, so a NFC East we're starting out with, that works. But Drew is was a top 10 overall in the 2021 Fantasy Pros Draft Rankings Challenge. He hit a couple top 10s, I think, last year in the weekly rankings. He's in the top 25 of the multi-year draft rankings over the past 3 years. So Drew's been crushing it. You've heard him on this podcast a few times. He's been working on sit starts. So he's a part of the team and he's ready to just kind of take right over. So I've had a great time leading this site over the years. I appreciate everyone out there who has listened, but I'm not going anywhere. You may hear me a little less, but I am still here for sure. So Drew, after all that, welcome. Hope you're enjoying this offseason and ready to kick into full gear here in fantasy football season.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. I want to just say off the top that QBList staff rankings were right up there with mine in the multi-year top 25, and I had nothing at all to do with that effort whatsoever. Eric, you and a few others did. I think Ryan Heath, Chris Sanzo, Dan Adams, I think, a few others worked together, and I think finished, 17th overall last year on 2022? That's awesome. Are what we saw on sit start teams. They continue to pump out some great quality content week in, week out. And I'm so excited to work with such a knowledgeable and talented group of people in this role. So we're looking forward to helping our readers and Redditors and listeners win some championships this season. So let's go ahead and get started by jumping in first to the NFC East, starting with the Dallas Cowboys. That's right. Eagles fan letting the Cowboys go first. So as an Eagles fan, though, I'm contractually obligated to let you, Eric, take the lead on this team. So go for it.
All right, let's start with the Cowboys. They're always an interesting team for sure. They're going to be at the top of the headlines. So you probably know about a lot of the notable additions and departures, but let's run through them real quick. Dallas Cowboys have added Brandon Cooks, a wide receiver, Ronald Jones, a running back. He's still kicking around the league. They drafted Luke Schoonmaker, tight end in the second round, Deuce Vaughn, running back, sixth round, Jalen Brooks, wide receiver in the seventh. So really the big addition there is Brandon Cooks. They did lose some people, obviously. Dalton Schultz at tight end, Noah Brown at wide receiver, T.Y. Hilton at wide receiver, and then Ezekiel Elliott. He's still floating around out there, so maybe he comes back. Who knows? But otherwise, we had some coaching changes. Offensive coordinator Kellen Moore was dumped and sent to L.A. pretty quickly there. So not sure why, you know, Mike McCarthy felt the need to change things up. But they now have Brian Schottenheimer. McCarthy's going to call a lot of plays. He's going to be the play caller, game planner. This is Mike McCarthy's team already, but now it's really his offense. So that's kind of catching you up to speed here on the Dallas Cowboys offseason. I wouldn't be surprised if they have a running back move still in them. But as of now, that's where we're at with this team heading into the beginning of August. So we're going to start out with a big question here and then kind of see how things take us talking about the Cowboys. But Drew, I wanted to ask you, with Mike McCarthy and Brian Schottenheimer calling shots for this offense, what do you think about Dak Prescott here? Is he more or less likely to revert to form as a valuable fantasy asset in 2023?
Well, I really liked Dak as a kind of low-key value a few years ago before his injury. He would get you a lot of points rushing, you know, fantasy points rushing. So he had that nice floor that came along with that. But ever since the injury, he really hasn't contributed in that way. So it's been strictly arm. He led the NFL in interceptions last year. So it was a season to forget last year for Dak. And Mike McCarthy is not a guy who inspires a lot of confidence for me. So I'm concerned that this offense takes a step back under McCarthy. I think Kellen Moore had a lot more creativity, I think, and you know, and I think he was ultimately a lot better had they stuck with him and trying to work out some of the kinks for Dak. So I think Dak's kind of less likely to kind of revert to form as a valuable asset. I think he's kind of in that Kirk Cousins-ish kind of tier at this point. So I think he's kind of being overdrafted a little bit in super flex leagues. Some people are taking him in the second. I think it's a little rich for me. So I'm not avoiding him flat out, but I just kind of think that we just kind of have to level set our expectations for what Dak is at this stage in his career.
Yeah, I'm on board with you there. I said he's less likely to show us that high fantasy football ceiling that we once saw. It's kind of two issues here, the coaches and then Dak himself. So yeah, I mean, Dak's currently QB 11 on Underdog, which I don't really have a problem with. He's got a shot of reaching the top 10 this year. He could easily be a top 10 quarterback. I think it's super flex. Yeah, he's safe. So he's solid and super flex, but probably not a target of mine in one QB leagues. Like you said, he doesn't run a lot anymore. So he was really getting by on volume in the past. That was his big thing, was his passing volume. And those dropped to 33 attempts per game, which were his lowest since 2018. Last year, it dropped to 33 attempts per game. So it did tick up towards the end of the season. And in the playoffs, he was more like 36 attempts per game over the last final seven games. But like, I don't know. I just don't think we're getting that volume. And then you look at the coaches, Brian Schottenheimer and Mike McCarthy, like, Schottenheimer has ranked in the top half of the league in passing attempts just once when he's been a coordinator. It was like back in 2008. So this is, I don't know. I just think it's trending here as not, you know, Titans run heavy, but I don't think this is going to be 50 attempts a game Dak Prescott anymore. Do you see that the same? Like maybe we're transitioning to a more run heavy, which is weird to say because the Cowboys lost Zeke, but maybe we're going more run heavy here.
Yeah, I do. I do think that's I think that's probably the best thing to do. I think it's how you get the most out of Dak and get him back into what he's comfortable doing and doing well. I think it's good for Tony Pollard. I'm very high on Tony Pollard this year. But I think that if we do have any kind of renaissance with Dak this year, With Schultz gone, I mean, Jake Ferguson's going to have to step up and play a role at tight end. He could be ready. He's not a supremely athletically talented or gifted player, but he's competent. And then I think Brandon Cooks, I think, is really the key, I think, to this whole offensive as to whether or not they can kind of take that next step into being really a challenge for the Eagles this year. So Cooks has been as solid as they've come for a very, very long time. He's just a steady veteran presence. I think having him on the other side or along on the same field with CeeDee Lamb, I think it's going to be a key. Apparently, Michael Gallup's got a little bit more spring in his step. So, if there are some pieces there, I think if they can get clicking and the offensive line holds together, then they could certainly put together a nice season and that could fall in, like you said, into that top 10 role. I just don't think he has that top 5 ceiling that we were used to seeing from him before.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in Dak's defense, we have seen him put up like 20 plus point per game season. So, I mean, that's pretty elite territory. That's not, Mahomes, Jalen Hurts level, but it's up there. So we have seen him do it before in his defense. So I don't know. I kind of think this is transitioning into a defensive team, a run first team, and then McCarthy. It just worries me calling the plays, but we'll see. If he does drop in drafts, that's when I think I'd be looking at him. So not running out to get him, but I could see a value hitting on him later in the offseason.
Sure. All right, well, let's get into the New York Giants then. Some of their notable additions. We have Darren Waller, the tight end, coming over from the Las Vegas Raiders. We have Harris Campbell coming over from the Colts. Jamison Crowder still kicking around. He's in the fold there with the Giants now. It feels like they have a ton of those kinds of same players now at wide receiver. Jalin Hyatt was taken from Tennessee in the third round, and the running back Eric Gray in the fifth. Notable departures. They lost Richie James to the Chiefs, and Kenny Galladay, kind of addition by subtraction there. Unfortunately, it's an unceremonious departure there. He was just kind of a big disappointment for the Giants. And they're the only NFC East team with no change at a head coach, offensive coordinator, or defensive coordinator. So that's one good thing that working for the Giants this year is they do have some continuity in terms of scheme and coaching. So all that said, we talked before about some of the wide receiver depth. Mentioned Crowder's there. They just drafted Hyatt. We've got Wandale Robinson coming off of a knee. Of course, Paris Campbell, the new addition. Slayton is still kicking around. Who knows where Sterling Shepard is, if he's in the medical tent already or what. But there's a lot of names there. So who do you think from this depth chart emerges as the wide receiver one for the Giants? And does anyone really stand out, or is this just a pile of hopeless mediocrity that we should just avoid late in drafts?
Does Darren Waller count as wide receiver one? assuming we're not counting Waller in this discussion, which I think we'll get to him later. But this is generally the profile players I am not drafting. I would say if I had to pick one, it's Isaiah Hodgins. He's at least young going into his age 25 season. He followed Daboll from Buffalo to the Giants. He scored a touchdown in 5 of his last 7 games, including the playoffs last year. So underdog, he's going wide receiver 74. That's a good price. I'll draft him there at the right, in the right draft. So I think he could score a few touchdowns. But honestly, the rest of this receiver core I'm out on. I mean, Paris Campbell is going into year 5 and hasn't really broken out yet at all. Same with Darius Slayton. I do like Wandale Robinson. He's fun, but he's coming off an ACL. He might miss time. I think next year maybe is the year to draft Wandale Robinson. Even Jalin Hyatt, he was a 3rd-round pick, but this receiver class was kind of weak, and I think he's a deep threat, and I'm not sure he's going to be a fantasy producer. And then outside of that, you got a bunch of 30-plus-year-old receivers, and I mean, none of them have really produced all that much in their career either. Cole Beasley's 34, Drew. I did not realize that Cole Beasley is 34. Sterling Shepard and Crowder are both over 30. I just don't see anything there. So I'm going to let other people draft him. Maybe somebody pops up on waivers early on and I pick them up, but I don't think I'm going to use a draft pick on any of them.
Yeah, I think in standard traditional one quarterback leagues of regular and usual size, they're definitely, I think to me, mostly fades there. I mean, you could take a shot on some of these upside guys if you wanted to. I think Paris Campbell's had a lot of buzz in OTAs leading into camp. If that continues, I might be interested in him just given his prospect profile. Coming out of Ohio State, he was very, very talented prospect. His big knock was he couldn't stay healthy. Now he's finally healthy. He definitely flashed a little bit last year in Indianapolis. And of course, they had some, obviously quarterback issues and things going on there in their offense. They've had a lot of turnover over there. So It could be a situation where he's walking into an offense and where they're trying to look for that one guy to step up. I think if I had to put chips down on anyone really to step up to potentially be a wide receiver one, it's probably going to be him. But I just kind of feel like this is going to be one of those teams where different people are going to step up in different weeks. And I think that's great for best ball, especially at the prices of where they're going. But in a traditional, draft at the start of the season, managed league, that's those aren't guys that are very attractive to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I could see Crowder, Shepard, Beasley, all those guys really rotating out of the slot. Campbell probably does bring something a little unique to the table where he could definitely get a role. He's going about the same range as Hodgins is on Underdog. So we're talking late in drafts. So I don't mind a flyer on Paris Campbell. Maybe after a year of finally staying healthy, maybe he's got a little more juice and shows something this year. I mean, the Colts were a mess last year, so maybe we shouldn't hold it against him too much last year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else on the Giants you want to touch on? I mean, it's kind of Saquon, right? Like, he's a solid pick at the top of your draft. Maybe there's some upside if Daniel Jones takes a leap, but I don't really know what else to add on this team. I think I would kind of expect more of the same. I trust Daboll to run an offense, but I don't know if this is going to be like a fantasy goldmine here.
No, I think you touched it off with your question about the wide receiver ones. I think Darren Waller is really the only guy that's other than Barkley or maybe Jones late that I'm really interested in. So Darren Waller is a supreme talent at tight end. Again, talk about issues staying healthy. That's Waller. But when he is healthy, he's as good as anybody. So I think as long as he's on the field, he's a guy that I want in my lineup every week.
Yeah. And we've got some targets and fades coming at the end of this show and also picking over unders on the win totals. So we will certainly touch on some of these players we skipped over in a little more detail. But let's get to your Philadelphia Eagles. This is the one that we're probably going to talk a lot longer on. There's a lot of good fantasy stuff here. So the Eagles, notable additions over the offseason, added Marcus Mariota at backup quarterback. They added both DeAndre Swift and Rashad Penny at running back. Olamide Zaccheaus at wide receiver. Dan Arnold at tight end. One of my all-time favorites, Dan Arnold. Tanner McKee drafted in the sixth round at quarterback. So a little depth at quarterback here. They lost Gardner Minshew, Miles Sanders to the Panthers, and Zach Pascal at wide receiver. So one key loss at running back there. And then a lot of change at coaching here. Lost both their offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. Shane Steichen is now the head coach of the Colts. He was calling plays, did an excellent job. And Jonathan Gannon, maybe not as great of a job, but he somehow beat out Lou Anarumo, my Bengals defensive coordinator, to be the coach of the Cardinals. So I'm not sure how that one happened, Drew, but you're probably not going to miss Jonathan Gannon a ton, are you?
Not at all. So I think I speak for most of Philadelphia when I say that. So I think the Eagles fans were just kind of happy to see him leave. And I don't know. I'm not even sure if Jeffrey Lurie wanted him to leave on the team playing after the Super Bowl. So that was just an embarrassing set of circumstances there. So I'm excited to have, Sean Desai coming in for the defense. That's going to be great. And the new Georgia Bulldogs defense that they've built there with Jordan Davis now coming in slimmer and stronger and faster and quicker than last year. Jalen Carter, of course, has been a man among boys. And, of course, N'Kobe Dean taking over in the middle now. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that defense, and I'm excited for that. I am cautiously optimistic about the offense under Brian Johnson, hoping that everything clicks as well as did last year. But I do believe in the talent. I believe in the offensive line. I believe in Hurts and, of course, the skill position players as much. So that I don't think there's going to be a huge drop in continuity. Wouldn't surprise me if they stumble a little bit as they kind of figure themselves out again at the start. But I don't have any long-term concerns at all for this team down the stretch for sure.
All right. Big question for the Eagles here. I mean, I think we know this passing game. There's a ton of talent in this passing game. It's the running back position for sure. Current consensus among most fantasy analysts seems to be to target Rashad Penny at ADP, not DeAndre Swift. Swift, kind of surprising to me, is going up in the 60s in one QB leagues, while Rashad Penny's going around pick 100. That was on Sleeper as of end of July. I'm kind of surprised Swift's going that early. So do you agree with me on that one? Like, Penny is maybe a deal. Swift is not a deal. What do you think about this Eagles backfield? I know you know this one about it as well as anyone, including some of the players down further on the depth chart. So what do you think happens here with Eagles running backs, and who should we draft here in a couple months?
Well, I think Swift is a guy that I think was starting to fall quite a bit. I think a lot of analysts were sharp on Penny and were starting to fade Swift just because of the roles. You look at Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders has received a ton of volume after the Tampa Bay Thursday night game. I think it was the one where they got one carry about a year or so ago. After that, they made more of a commitment to him. But he had quite a large sum of touches last year. So they did rotate back, but he unquestionably became the lead guy last year. So you look at the profiles of the players that are coming in, and Penny kind of fits that mold a lot more than Swift does. So he seems like the guy that's going to be your early down back. He's a punishing runner. He's fast. He's explosive when he's healthy. He apparently is healthy. We'll have to see. I want to see him in training camp. I want to see him in preseason and see what he looks like. But if he's healthy behind that offensive line, he could be an absolute beast. He is owed only, was it $1.3 million this year, so they're not paying him a ton of money. If for some reason it's not working out, for whatever reason, they can actually let him go, and it wouldn't be too much of skin off their back with Swift there and all these free agent running backs. Wouldn't surprise me if something happened, they brought one of those guys in. But the thing about Swift that's interesting to me is that they've had kind of a hole at wide receiver three, if you will, for some time. So they really wanted Quez Watkins to step up in that role. And he's kind of flashed, if you will. He's made some big plays, but he hasn't really developed in that all-around threat as a wide receiver three. So Olamide Zaccheaus coming in, I think, profiles more as your possession third down kind of a guy. But he's really unspectacular. He doesn't really do a lot of things extremely well. But news came out, I guess, today that there's some rumblings from the Eagles that they're looking to use Swift a lot more in the passing game. So that has my interest in PPR leagues. So if you're looking at a situation where you're taking maybe a two-back set and you're putting Swift in motion, all of a sudden now he's in the slot, that interests me. So in a PPR league, I'm not going to say he's going to be, you know, anything like Austin Eckler or anything like that, but he certainly has the ability to log a lot more catches than I think a lot of us are thinking. So with that in mind, I don't think the ADP on Swift is totally ridiculous. But I kind of want him to drop another round or two before I pounce, if that makes sense at all. Whereas with Penny, I think he's still going to get enough volume, enough touches to clearly make that ADP worthwhile where he's going.
Yeah, I'm generally on board with all that. Swift is going on Underdog. He's going ADP 78 overall, right next to David Montgomery. I would take David Montgomery 100 times out of 100 over DeAndre Swift personally, just being in that Lions running game. The pass catching would be great if we can get him to work as a receiver a little bit. I just worry it's just this offense why is Jalen Hurts going to check it down to Swift? I just don't see that in traditional running back passing, like in that kind of role in the offense. I don't see him catching a bunch of dump downs. Miles Sanders played 17 games last year and only had 26 targets. I think Kenneth Gainwell was targeted around that amount of time too. So it's just not, unless they do scheme him up as a third receiver, I just don't see the volume. So at that ADP, I'm pretty much out on Swift. I'd rather take the running back or the receivers in that range. Penny, though, I'm on board. Pick 100, that's a lot later. It's easier to stomach the issues here. Obviously, injury concerns. Like you said, I was reading that he could get cut. Realistically cut, because he's not going to play special teams necessarily. So if they want to keep Swift and Gainwell and then a special teams back, like maybe he gets cut. But I think all that risk is baked into ADP 100. And he's got a 5.7 yards per attempt over his career. So I just think don't get too excited about Penny, because he's not going to catch passes. Hurts is going to vulture touchdowns. But I think that Penny could have some monster like spike games where he could run for 150 yards, you know? So that's what I'm chasing here is Penny, not Swift. We'll see if his price drops. But do you have any thoughts on Kenneth Gainwell? Like, I was a little surprised. I've seen some late round hype in the fantasy community on Kenneth Gainwell, and I'm not really there. Are you optimistic about him at all for a fantasy perspective?
I'm not too much. I mean, I look at what Gainwell has done. Gainwell's always, he's kind of a competent kind of a rollback, if you will. I mean, there's some things that he does well, but he didn't really flash or shine too much as a receiving back. He's made some plays, but he hasn't shown that explosiveness that DeAndre Swift brings. So I think Swift's going to take some of that role away from him in that regard. Like I said, I think you might find him lining up in the slot a lot more than any back ever has for the Eagles. I think they're going to use him differently than they used Sanders last year or any other back. But yeah, I think Gainwell's a guy that I'm keeping my eye on if something happens in this backfield, because he can come in, out of nowhere and post a nice fantasy week as a great, some great flex value. But I think standalone, he's not a guy in for traditional one quarterback leagues of usual size, regular 5 to 7 bench. He's not a guy that I'm really looking to kind of hang on to. He doesn't have that smash upside that some of the other running backs that are going around his neighborhood might offer, like a Tyjae Spears in Tennessee or a Chase Brown in Cincinnati. Those kinds of guys I think offer a lot more upside than Gainwell does, even in that offense.
Yeah, I do agree. I think a lot of people got excited because he played 51% of the snaps in the Super Bowl, and if they're playing him there, they trust him, obviously, but he only hit 40% of the snaps like three other games all year. So it's just, I just don't know that the workload's going to be there with Gainwell. I don't see him ever being a workhorse. So maybe I'm too low on Swift. You look at Miles Sanders' line from last year, nearly 1,300 yards and 11 touchdowns. And yeah, if Swift gets that role and keeps it and stays healthy, he could put up those numbers. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on this whole backfield. But right now, I'm taking Penny pretty often, really, in my drafts.
Yeah, that's very fair. All right, the Washington Commanders. This might be the last year we call them that, from the words that are coming out, that Josh Harris group that bought the Commanders, as they've already put out there, they're looking to change the name and rebrand after the season. So those poor Washington fans, they went from one team name to the football team, the Commanders, and who knows what's next. So I feel for you all and the closets, what they must look like with the different jerseys. So anyway, the notable additions with Jacoby Brissett. He's going to come in to challenge the default incumbent, if you will, Sam Howell, former fifth-round pick out of UNC, who is looking like the starter. Chris Rodriguez was taken in the sixth, running back. And then we lost a few people here from Washington. Cam Sims, Taylor Heineke, he's going to Atlanta. Carson Wentz is kicking around, waiting for a gig. And J.D. McKissic is also finally gone from Washington, much to the delight of Antonio Gibbs. Truthers. So coaching changes. Eric Bieniemy comes from Kansas City to take over as the offensive coordinator. So happy for Eric Bieniemy that he finally got an opportunity. Unfortunately, it's a lateral move for him going from Kansas City to Washington. Wish him well, except for when he plays the Eagles. But big question for you, Eric, is are we in or out on Sam Howell as the quarterback of the Commanders this season?
I'm pretty much entirely out. I hate to boil it down to this simple of an analysis, but at the end of the day, he's a 6'1" fifth round pick. He's got one career game played. Like, I don't know. Maybe he runs around a little bit and provides like a poor Daniel Jones type season. He does have some rushing ability. Maybe that happens. He holds the gig all year. And, you know, he's on the streaming radar, maybe back end, you know, QB1 territory, but I just don't see it. I don't think there's enough pedigree here for me to buy into it. And this is a really solid roster. So if he struggles, I think there's a good chance that he's replaced by Jacoby Brissett. I mean, we've seen Brissett at least keep teams in the game. And, you know, this is a veteran team. They're not going to want to be out there with a rookie just losing games for him. So I don't know. I if you gave me over under on starts on Sam Howell, I mean, I don't even know how many I would. I mean, I'm taking the under, I guess, is what I would say. So I'm out. I don't know if you're any more optimistic on him, but I think this is just a team waiting to draft a quarterback or make a big move now that Dan Snyder's gone.
Well, hope springs eternal in late July and early August. So I'm a little bit more bullish on Sam Howell. So I guess I recall, 2 years ago when he was a rookie this time, was it last year? He was, I guess it was, people expect him to go a lot sooner in the draft than he did. No one expected him, I think, to go in the first, but there were people that would not have been surprised if it was a day two pick. And then he lasted, of course, as we know, all the way down to the fifth round. So, but the crazy thing is that you had asked all the experts and pundits the year before that, who was the top quarterback in this draft, which, of course, Kenny Pickett ended up being the only one taken in the first round. They all would have said Sam Howell. And he, I guess, after his great junior year, he lost a lot of talent his senior year. I'm trying to remember who off the top of my head was gone. Deami Brown was one of his top receivers. Michael Carter was one of his top running backs. So they've been kind of pedestrian in the NFL to date, but at UNC and the ACC, they were pretty solid options. So he actually did a lot more with his legs his senior year. He ran for a ton of yards. He can move in the pocket. He's not exceptionally fast, though. So that's the thing. He doesn't have that Justin Fields or Lamar Jackson kind of game-breaking ability on the ground. He's a guy that could scoot a little and pick up some yards here and there with his nothing. So, I mean, I, I'm not going to say he's a guy that's going to, you know, watch this guy's going to come out of nowhere. He's going to lead your team to a championship. And how dare everybody sleep on Sam Howell? But right. You know, he's got a rocket arm. He can make all the throws. He's got Terry McLaurin and the emerging Jahan Dotson to throw to. If we can ever figure out Antonio Gibson, there's a potential weapon there. So he's got some possibilities. There's a path for him to be productive. However, I think is a lot more a guy I'm interested in super flex leagues, two quarterback leagues. But in regular traditional leagues, it doesn't make sense for me to take the dice. There's just too many other guys that I know for I can hang my hat on. And like you said, Brissett's there. I think Brissett's more of a kill switch if things don't go right with Howell, because I think they want to ride Howell as long as they can, give him as many opportunities to see if he can be the guy. But if it goes south, you know, week 9, week 10, that's going to be it. That they're going to pull the plug and Brissett will ride out from there just so they can end the season with some dignity. So that's kind of how I see that. So what are your thoughts there? You kind of agree, disagree on that? Or
yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see this offense with Eric Bieniemy running things. And I mean, Curtis Samuel's a solid number three. Like, they've got a lot of talent here. So yeah, I'm very interested to see what their offense looks like. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just not counting on Howell staying productive, healthy for the whole season. I think we're going to see some Brissett, but we'll see. But yeah, I am really curious to see what Bieniemy is going to look like here and how much of it was Andy Reid. How much did he learn from Andy Reid? I'm excited he gets a shot. We'll see how long their head coach sticks around. Maybe he'll get a shot to get promoted after this year, depending on how the season goes. But yeah, there's a lot of talent here on this offense. So curious to see how it shakes out. Even in Superflex, I mean, I just, like I said, I'm just not sure how many starts we're getting out of him. So we'll see. Maybe he takes it and runs with it all year and you get 17 starts. But I like to get those guys that are dependable. They're going to play the whole season if you can in Superflex. And so he's just generally not on my radar. But I don't know. Maybe I'm missing out here. I'm certainly not a college football expert. So maybe I missed the best of Sam Howell a couple of years ago.
All right. So let's go into fades and targets now. We had a section here where we can kind of pick out an all target team and an all fade team from our division, from this division here, the NFC East. So, Eric, we'll start with you on this one. Who from this division can we not get enough of at current ADP, or who are we trying to load up on from the quarterback position?
Yeah. So I picked a lot of early picks in this section. I feel a little bad about it. I wanted to go a little deeper down, but I think it's just the way this division is. My target at quarterback is Jalen Hurts. I'm not someone who generally takes quarterbacks very early, but I think Jalen Hurts is an exception. He's going about the end of the second round on Underdog, and I think that's just about the right spot to lock in his upside. I mean, he had the best full quarterback season on a point-per-game basis over the past three seasons. And the Eagles were often shutting things down in the fourth quarter last year. They had a super easy schedule. They were barely putting up points in the fourth quarter in most games. So with a first-place schedule, with a good schedule here, and this whole division has a pretty tough schedule, I would expect them to have to put up more points, put the, you know, the pedal to the metal a little more and throw it more. So I love Hurts there. I totally understand if you do not want to draft a quarterback at the end of the second round. So I still think it's viable to pass on him and get some values later. But I just, he's one of the most locked in quarterbacks. I'm completely buying last year. If he keeps rushing for this many touchdowns, he's going to be QB1 for years to come.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just the touchdowns too. He had over 760 yards rushing as well. So he had 165 attempts. I think that led all quarterbacks. So they were not shy about letting him do his thing. And they even asked Nick Sirianni, head coach, after Hurts got that big contract, are you going to be using him less on the ground to kind of mitigate risk? He says, no, we are not paying him more to do less. He's going to continue to be Jalen Hurts and doing what he does. So rest assured, fantasy managers, that if you're drafting Jalen Hurts, you're still going to be getting all the benefits of the tush push and everything else that he gave us last year. So, you don't have to sell me on Hurts. Yeah.
But 11 rushing attempts a game last year. The year before that was 9.27. I'm sure that was a little lower because of some partial games or something there. So he's running a ton. His passing touchdown rate wasn't like some unsustainable number. It was under 5%. So it's not like he just got lucky throwing touchdowns. He could actually get better there. So yeah, Hurts is my favorite of the top tier to draft, I would say. I just don't see it falling apart as long as he's healthy.
All right. So for my quarterback, I chose the guy directly below him on that quarterback rushing yards list with 708, and that would be Daniel Jones from the New York Giants. So Daniel Jones ran for 708 yards. Here's the list of quarterbacks who ran for more yards than Jones last year in the NFL. Justin Fields, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Jalen Hurts. That's it. That's the list. Next closest to him was Marcus Mariota with 438. So to me, he offers, you know, a much higher floor than I think that a lot of us realize. So he's kind of like the sneaky, hey, I'm going to wait on quarterback and load up other positions. He's a guy I'm targeting if that's my strategy. So let me get all the running backs, all the receivers, top tight end, and see if I can swoop in and take Daniel Jones. Because we talked about Darren Waller a little bit earlier. If he's able to stay healthy, then Jones should, you know, realize an uptick in his passing, not only volume, but also his touchdown rate. So his touchdown volume was really, really low last year. So I'm expecting some positive regression in that department, especially with Waller on board now. And like we said, if any one of those receivers can step up. So it's possible that he could sneak in easily into the top 10, maybe even a little higher than that if that offense really starts to click.
Yeah, I mean, he's still going QB14 on Underdog, which tends to prioritize upside, you know, just because you're trying to win a big tournament. And he certainly has upside. So I think he's still a reasonable price. Like you mentioned, he had 7.5 rushing attempts per game last year. That's up there with the almost up there with the elites. His touchdown rate was down towards 3%. So he's got some positive regression coming. So, yeah, I agree. I'm still not really sold on Daniel Jones in general as a real life quarterback, but I do like Dable. And if he keeps the same role where he's running the ball a ton, he's going to be a good fantasy producer. So, I do think he is one of my targets if I'm waiting on quarterback this year.
All right.
Let's get to running back targets here. I'll go ahead and kick mine off here. My running back target is going to be Tony Pollard. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but I think we're overthinking this one, Drew. Like, it feels too good to be true that Zeke finally left. And I think some people are kind of waiting for like the other shoe to drop here or something. But I mean, I think you could argue that Tony Pollard's worth a first round pick here if you want an early running back in drafts. So, I mean, he's only 26. He doesn't have a ton of mileage. He's playing on a team that needs him to produce. I think it's just Malik Davis behind him right now. There's really not a ton of weapons to steal touches other than CeeDee Lamb. I mean, they've got some depth at receiver, but I mean, there's nobody that's just demanding the ball outside of CeeDee. So Pollard put up 15 point PPR points per game last year, even with Zeke still around. And that's already getting pretty close to Nick Chubb season, you know? So he had third most breakaway runs last year, according to fantasy data, which are 15 plus yard runs, best breakaway rate in the league at almost 9%. So I think Pollard, sure, more touches. He's not going to be maybe quite as explosive, but I think he's going to get a ton of work. Cowboys have good defense. I could just see just tons of volume for Tony Pollard. So if you can get him in the second round, I just think it's an awesome spot for Pollard. And I'm drafting him pretty much wherever I can.
Yeah, I was very, very happy to get him in my Scott Fishbowl draft. And was it the third round? I think it was. So I was thrilled by that. So I was super excited with that. I'm on board with everything that you said about him. It takes a lot for me to wax poetic about a Dallas Cowboy, but Tony Pollard is a guy I'm targeting in just about every draft. And I hope I don't lose my Philadelphia card for saying that, but here we are. So, I chose Brian Robinson. We hear about what's his name again? Antonio Gibson. Oh, that guy, right? So yeah. we keep hearing he's going to be a thing every year, right? So, I've fallen for it before. So fool me once, shame on me. You're not going to fool me twice because I'm going to go with Brian Robinson this year. So Brian Robinson, they showed their cards early with him. He was a volume guy. He had 205 carries last year. That doesn't seem like a whole lot until you remember that Robinson missed the first four games of the season last year. This guy was shot. In the rear end or the leg, right? And he missed four games and then came in and had 205 carries. He also didn't play week 17. So he missed five games of the season and he had 205 carries. He topped 20 rushing attempts with like five, six times, I think it was. So they are not shy about giving him the football. Did he do a whole lot with it? We could have a conversation about that because he only had 3.9 yards per carry, two touchdowns. If this offense continues to take a step, if it does take a step with how he should be getting more opportunities in the red zone, which would naturally lead to some positive touchdown regressions, it's hard to imagine that a guy has 205 carries and only two touchdowns. So I think getting his legs back underneath him, hopefully an uneventful preseason this year, assuming he's still the guy, in early downs, I think he's a value. I think a lot of people are still chasing that what they want Antonio Gibson to be when Riverboat Ron Rivera showed us that Brian Robinson's his guy. So add all that up, especially in half point PPR. I'm absolutely in on Brian Robinson where he's going.
Yeah, I've never been real high on Robinson, but I mean, he's like 24 years old. He had 17 carries a game last year. Like, the running back position is kind of rough right now, and just getting a young running back that had a lot of touches, he's gonna drop in a lot of drafts, I think. So yep. He's definitely a value you can scoop up. He's cheaper than Gibson. It's a new coaching staff, so we don't really know. Well, a new offensive coordinator, I should say, but sure. We don't really know how they're going to chop this up with Gibson and Robinson, and you know, even the rookie Rodriguez, I believe. So, who knows how this shakes out? But I do agree. Like, I mean, we're talking he's getting drafted an underdog around like Samaje Perine, Damian Harris, Devon Achane. It's just like, I don't know. Once you get to that range, I think it's worth taking shots on him because, like you said, we've seen him get a ton of work and. Maybe with a little bit better of an offense, we see some spike deficiency here.
Very good. All right.
All right. Let's get to receiver. I'm picking another early one here. You're going out on a limb a little more than me, so this is kind of a cop-out. But I'm going to target Devontae Smith here. This Eagles passing game, I want a part of it. Really, any part of this Eagles offense, but he's a better discount than AJ Brown. You don't have to take him in the first round. And I think Devontae Smith is just supremely talented. He exploded down the stretch. Like I said earlier, you could see more passing game work with a tougher schedule for the Eagles where they're throwing it more. Could you imagine if AJ Brown got hurt, like what a couple weeks of Smith by himself would be? Like, I just think there's a lot of upside here, and he's already been an excellent fantasy producer. So there's not a lot to really discuss here on Smith. He just checks all the boxes, and if he falls to the third round, like, he's just a no-brainer selection for me. So I don't know, as an Eagles fan, I can't imagine you're going to push back on it, but I just see him as a clear target at wide receiver.
I was very excited when the Eagles got Devontae Smith in the draft. I somehow managed to trade with the Dallas Cowboys to leapfrog the Giants to do it. It was just absolutely poetic, and he has not been disappointed at all. His first season – he broke the franchise record for most receptions in a season by a rookie wide receiver. And that the Eagles, this is their 90th season. So he had the best rookie season of any receiver ever. Followed that up as a sophomore with the most catches in franchise history by a receiver at any stage of his career, any wide receiver. So you're talking, you know, Irving Fryer, you're talking T.O. was here. Mike Quick was a legend back in the 80s. So Harold Carmichael, the great Hall of Famer. So it's been Tom McDonald, another one. There's some great receivers that have come through Philadelphia, and nobody has caught more passes in the season than Devontae Smith. And he's only entering year three. So I'm super excited for where he's going. He's a phenomenal talent to watch. He just makes it look so effortless and so easy. He's such a talented and skilled player, and Eagles are fortunate to have him. So I agree. He's a guy that I'm never going to be upset with if I take Devontae Smith. And some people think that his ADP might be a little high, and I think it's completely justified. So my guy, my pick was Jahan Dotson. For some reason, that's two in a row from the Commanders. But Jahan Dotson, down the stretch last year, last five games of the season, had the misfortune of having to catch passes from three different quarterbacks. And he finished with a 20% or higher target share in each one of those five games. Terry McLaurin did not. And I love Terry McLaurin. I'm a big fan of his talent. And this is not dismissive of him at all, but I can certainly see a path for Jahan Dotson to be the wide receiver one as soon as this year. I think he has that kind of game break ability, that kind of talent. He definitely caught more touchdowns than I expected last year, for sure. So maybe you could argue there might be some negative regression in that department. But he's such a talented supreme player. I thought he was drafted a little high, and he proved me wrong. I'm a believer, I expect big things for him. And I think he's a tremendous value for where he's going. I'm seeing him in the 8th, 10th round, you know, in that neighborhood. And I think that's an absolute smash. In one quarterback leagues, for sure, if he ever falls that far.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to – the first round 16th overall pick in the NFL draft, you know, like that's – you can't really ignore that. That's serious draft capital. And like you said, sure, he's due some touchdown regression if you're just looking at projections. But I think a rookie coming onto the field and scoring a bunch of touchdowns is a good sign, not like one to worry about necessarily. So
yeah, I'm
not targeting the Commanders a ton, but I totally get Jahan Dotson. If I'm on Dynasty, I'm super excited. I'm happy to draft him when he falls. I mean, it's so huge for rookie receivers to produce something for as far as signs for their future career. And he certainly did. So he's in good shape to continue on that. And we'll see how it shakes out, but he could definitely be kind of a 1B to McLaurin, or who knows. We'll see how high he can go, but I do like Dotson. I like taking shots on him as well.
Very good.
All right. We got the same one at tight end here, so we can just double up on this. This is a hilarious name from the NFC East. Who are we targeting at tight end? We are both targeting Jake Ferguson, who probably some of you out there don't even know what team he plays for. So this is the Dallas Cowboys tight end. Drew, I don't have a lot of analysis here. My analysis is essentially Dalton Schultz is gone, and he averaged 94 targets per season over the last 3 years. So that's what I'm going with Ferguson. He's super, super cheap. Probably most leagues you don't have to draft him, but he's someone to look at streaming right away, probably. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if week one he gets 7 targets and all of a sudden everyone's adding him. So what are your thoughts here? Why are we targeting Jake Ferguson at tight end?
No, I think you hit it right in the head. So now I will say this, though. The offensive coordinator who orchestrated that offense last year is gone. So he's now in Los Angeles. Gerald Everett stands to benefit potentially if that was a scheme thing. But the quarterback who threw those 94 targets is still there in the form of Dak Prescott. So if that's more a reflection of him and his tendencies, then Ferguson definitely is a guy that can kind of step right in. I think you nailed it. I think he's a guy that I'm not really – super excited to take, and he's a guy that if I punt the tight end position entirely and just kind of see what the board gives me while I load up on every other position, then he's a why not guy I can take and then just kind of stream the position from the waiver wire and see who's got a good matchup in a given week. And I think he could turn out to something. So I think he's got a chance of all, you look at all these, you know, potential streaming tight ends. I think he offers some upside. So he's not as physically talented and gifted as some that we would like. But he's a competent receiver, decent route runner, he seems to be the guy that's going to step in that role. And I know they did draft Luke Schoonover from Michigan in the second round, which is a ton of draft capital to put in a tight end. But historically, tight ends take some time to develop, so I would be surprised if he came right in day one and won the starting job over Ferguson, who is competent, knows the offense, and understands protection schemes and all those kinds of things that are super important to the tight end position. So I think Ferguson's a guy where I could take him late. If he doesn't pan out, no big deal. If he does, then he might have something.
Yep. And he was a 4th-round pick, so he's not a complete nobody. So I agree with you. Keep an eye on him. And it's not like Dalton Schultz was some, super athletic freak at tight end. So it could work out here. So let's get on to our all fade team from the NFC East. So, which players from this division are we passing on at ADP, letting someone else deal with? Drew, I'll let you kick this off here. As an Eagles fan, I'm sure you're going to really enjoy this section of the podcast.
I was going to point out that I didn't pick any Eagles for the targets. So I ended up going with every other team, which is shocking, but here we are. But on the fades, I do have Dak Prescott, just because for the reasons we talked about at the top of the show about the fact that he's not going to give us the rushing floor that we're used to. And I think that really kind of, forces him to have big games to the air when that may not be necessarily the way that the offense wants to operate. So I think our expectations for Dak are a little higher than they should be. So am I avoiding him outright? No. But am I taking him where he's going? Absolutely not.
Yep, I agree with that. I think we spent a good amount of time on Dak, so I'm on board with that for the most part. Another quick one here. My fade is going to be Sam Howell. I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but in Superflex, I just don't know if I can trust to get a full season of starts out of him. So I don't think the upside's that great for single quarterback. So I'm going to be passing on Sam Howell personally. But let's get on to running backs. This is going to be a much more fun discussion here. So, Drew, what running back are you going to be fading?
For me, it's Antonio Gibson. Again, we talked about it once. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, you're dead to me. So Antonio Gibson, is not a guy I'm interested in. What will change my mind is if Eric Bieniemy takes a liking to him and starts featuring him in his offense. the way that we've hoped that he would, that Gibson would be featured over the last couple of years. So, and there is a path to that with McKissick now gone, to be fair. So there is a world in which Antonio Gibson, can be fantasy relevant and maybe even, you know, have some top 24 weeks where he's a legitimate starter. But I need to see it to believe it. And that's kind of where I'm at. He needs to prove it to me.
Yeah, I'm mostly on board. Yeah. I've drafted him a time or two on some teams where I went wide receiver heavy early and just kind of scraping together stuff at running back. And I mean, he should see a decent amount of snaps here. And we've heard a few encouraging things from Eric Bieniemy about him. So maybe he's going to have his best season yet. But yeah, I'm generally on board with you. We've been down this road a few times with Gibson, and it's really like I've been waiting for the passing work to get better, and it just never has. I mean, he's received a decent amount of targets. I mean, we're talking up in the 50s, but you know, not much for, I mean, under 400 yards receiving last year. Like, it's just not amounting to a whole lot. So yeah, I'm on board. I'm generally fading him, but I do think if you are hurting at running back, he's some decent depth you could throw in there, and you know, maybe you get a few weeks out of him.
So, yeah, if he slips in PPR, why not? Yeah.
That's about as far as I'm going with him, though. I agree. Yeah. Okay. My fade at running back, it's going to be DeAndre Swift, and it pains me because I was a former Swift truther here. I really, even last year when things went so south for Swift in Detroit, you kind of still could close your eyes and start him, and he was scoring touchdowns. He was catching passes. You know, as bad as it was, he was still playable last year. But I just, like I said earlier, I just worry about Jalen Hurts not checking the ball down to him. The stuff about him working as a receiver, maybe out of the slot, that's encouraging, but I think we hear that a lot. So it doesn't always materialize once, you know, the real bullets are flying. So I just worry that if he is in a timeshare as a pass catching back, it's just not going to amount to a whole lot of receiving work here. I mean, really, why would you dump it down to Swift if Hurts can run it, or if he can throw it downfield to AJ Brown? You know, like, it's, there's just so much talent on that offense. So I'm going to be fading Swift. If he drops further than, you know, sixth or seventh round, then I'm going to start getting interested. But I really don't want to use a sixth round pick on DeAndre Swift. There are a lot of receivers there that I would rather take.
Yeah, that's very fair. I think that's the opportunity cost. That's the reason why I would fade him there. I still believe in his talent, and I can definitely see a world in which, you know, defenses try to, you know, have had enough of AJ Brown taking the top off, and they want to drop back and try to take that away. That wouldn't surprise me, which is going to leave the underneath wide open for a guy like Swift. So I kind of feel like Howie Roseman and the Eagles kind of see that, are seeing that coming. And I think this is kind of a chess move by them to say, go ahead, go for it, and we'll just kill you underneath with Swift, Goddard, and Devonta Smith. So that's one angle there for Swift, where I can see him kind of becoming relevant, but I think more best ball really, but I think he's going to have some out of nowhere, at least with Penny, he's gonna have some out of nowhere massive games, and then he could disappear for a while, which is kind of the way the Eagles running back position has been for a couple of years. But the thing is that the highs are going to be high, and that's why I can't totally ignore Swift, but I think it's fair to put him here.
Yeah, so, for me, Boston Scott kicking around, by the way, is Boston Scott still there?
Yes, what they do is they kind of keep him like in reserve, and then whenever they take the Giants games, they just kind of take him out of the case, dust them off, and just plug him right in, and there it goes, two touchdowns. So, but, yeah, they still have Scott. Yes, yeah. So yeah. For wide receivers, there for me, nobody really jumped off the page. They all seem pretty fairly priced. I guess maybe for some deep dives, we talked about Paris Campbell is a guy I'm looking at, and maybe even Wandale, but he's coming off that major knee injury. So I think if he starts on the pup or anything like that, or he, for whatever reason, he's not quite ready to start the season, then he's a guy I might stash on IR, and you know, you got some, potentially has somebody that can contribute down the stretch. So I'm probably going to take a shot maybe, at a Giants receiver if I had to, but I think in general, that whole cast I'm looking just kind of is a default fade for me until somebody really emerges.
Yeah. All right. My fade at wide receiver, this is one that worries me a little bit, actually, just because of the price, but, it's Brandon Cooks for the Cowboys. I don't think I have drafted him yet in any of my best ball leagues. He's going off the board at like wide receiver 42. So maybe that's a mistake. It's a pretty good discount, but I don't know. It's just he's on his age 30 season. He's never scored 10 touchdowns. He has drawn a lot of targets, 100 plus targets in six of his last nine seasons. But I mean, he was like the only option in Houston. And I don't know. I'm just not seeing the breakout here with Cooks. Maybe I'm missing out on like a discount wide receiver two here. Maybe you get him a wide receiver 42 and he's wide receiver 24 and it's a nice value. But I don't know. He's stuck behind CeeDee Lamb. The wide receiver age cliff is approaching. Like I just don't know that I see the upside here with Brandon Cooks. So I could be talked into this one for sure. Just again, because the price is pretty fair. But I've yet to draft him. There's just other people that I target. So Brandon Cooks is going to be my wide receiver fade.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, I think the allure of Brandon Cooks where he's going is that, oh my goodness, I can't believe that Brandon Cooks is still here. I'm going to take him with a value. But I think the reason why he's sliding is everything that you just mentioned. I think you make some very fair points. So this is one where you can kind of, you know, draw dividing lines and, you know, have a battle royale one side versus the other, you know, and have a, you could probably spend, you know, a good 5-10 minutes battling out whether Brandon Cooks is a good pick or not. But I think you nailed it. I think by default, let him slip. And then if he happens to still kick around, why not? But I'm certainly fading him. That's what we're talking about, your fades. And then if he happens to still be around well past where he should be, then why not? But my tight end fade, and I talked before about how good he is. And I know we're not supposed to call players injury prone, but what if he's on the wrong side of 30 and hasn't played 12 or more games in the season since 2020? And that's Darren Waller. Now, I know he's talented. I said as much. I definitely have some shares, but that's because he slid quite a bit in those cases. And he's quite polarizing. So I was in a draft recently, and I think Kittle went in the third round, and I ended up getting Waller in the sixth. Now, I can get behind that. But I've seen people taking Waller as early as the third and fourth rounds. That's just rich to me. I can't do that. I've seen him go both early and I end late. Generally I'm fading him and everyone else is doing the same. Then I'll pivot and take him and, you know, snatch him up when he starts becoming a value. But I think people are kind of drafting him, for upside at a point where I think it's a little bit too early to be drafting for upside, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's a tough one for me. I do agree. I have not been drafting him, so I worry that I'm missing out on something here. But there is a little bit of a cliff in the ADP once you get past Waller at tight end. And I think there are some guys behind him that I don't think are all that far off. I mean, just looking at, you know, sorting by ADP on Underdog, Evan Ingram, David Njoku, Pat Freiermuth come right after him. I would rather have them, you know, four rounds later, three rounds later, however much it is. I don't think there's all that much of a difference. If I thought the Giants were going to be more pass heavy, I could get on board, I think, with Waller. But just between Saquon rushing a lot, Daniel Jones rushing a lot, I'm not personally completely sold on Daniel Jones as a passer anyway. There's a lot of slot options here. I'd be surprised if we see a massive, you know, Darren Waller had 147 targets back in the day, and that was a monster season. Mm-hmm. I don't see that upside personally. And then, like you said, that's not even talking about age and injury. So, yeah, I'm on board with you with Waller. I mean, how far do you think he's got to drop for you? Like generally, just a couple of rounds past ADP, maybe, or round past ADP?
I'm looking at maybe a couple of rounds, because like you mentioned before about why you're fading Swift in, you know, the sixth round, just because of the receiver value that's there. I think the same case can be made for Waller. Now, the only caveat is you did mention with that the tier break that's there, him being the last of a tier. But I'm with you on Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram had a terrific season last year, and everyone's just putting him out to pasture like it's never going to happen ever again. And in a Doug Peterson offense that typically features tight ends, so that to me that's wild. I mean Ingram and Waller to me in projection are very, very close to each other, and there's a massive chasm in their ADPs, and I think that's – I'm with you on that one. Unless he really falls farther than he should, and I'm not really liking the receivers that are there, I do have some shares just because there are quite a few people who are thinking the same as I am. So, and that's the thing. Right. As a drafter, you always have to pivot and take what the board gives you. So he's a fade by default for me, but I can see him coming to a point where I say, oh my goodness, there's Darren Waller and he's still there. I guess I'm going to have to take him. So,
yeah. Same boat. For my fade, I don't have a real strong stance here. I'm generally skipping, though, the tier of Waller and Dallas Goedert. I guess I'll say Goddard is my fade. It's not a strong fade by any means. He's very efficient and he's a talented tight end. But this is just this section of tight ends I'm usually skipping. Like sometimes I'll spend up on Kelce or, you know, Mark Andrews. Outside of that, I'd rather just wait until Evan Engram, Pat Freiermuth, David Njoku, that kind of range. I think there's a lot of talent there. And then there's even a lot of later round ones if you're completely punting. Like, I mean, I think I drafted Juwan Johnson for the Saints at about every single draft I've done. So maybe he's too high up on my rankings board. But I think that's the range there, Waller and Goddard, that I'm kind of fading in general. I'd rather go early or just kind of punt it until the, you know, eighth, ninth or so rounds, wherever they're going. So, real strong there for me, Drew.
Yeah, I agree. And we talked before, Gerald Everett is a guy going late, and he's completely forgotten about. He's just one of those guys that you can just count on being there super late. And he's going to get a Kellen Moore offense and what should be a very potent Chargers offense. And that's a piece that I'd like to have of that offense super late. So again, you talk about the opportunity cost, would you rather have Waller and then, you know, a dart throw receiver late, or would you rather have a guy like Everett who's going to have a defined role and has upside, and then, you know, a potential stud wide receiver? That's a no brainer for me. So,
yeah, and around Waller's range on underdog, it's like Pickens, it's Quentin Johnson, Treylon Burks. Like, there's some breakout potential there. Jahan Dotson isn't far off from Waller's ADP. So there's some young receivers you can get right where Waller's going.
Absolutely. So 2-minute drill. We talked about the over-under season win totals. And this is from Odd Shark as of Thursday, the 27th of July. So they probably have not changed much since then or the time of your listening here. But so we have Dallas 9.5. I'll throw that one to you, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, I am worried about McCarthy, but I'm still taking the over. It's a tough schedule, but I do think, even though we're down on Dak for fantasy, he's a good real-life quarterback, and I really think their defense is awesome. So I think Dallas gets to 10 wins. It's just a tough schedule. That's the only reason I'm hesitant.
Yeah, this is a veritable coin flip for me. This is a great line. I can see it going either way. So I can see the Cowboys going 9-8 very easily. But I think I have to default to, you know, 10-win season just because, like you mentioned, the defense is just so, so good. They're so talented on the other side of the ball. And I believe in Tony Pollard. Their offensive line is not trash. So it's not nowhere near as good as the Eagles, but it should be competent enough where they're able to move the football on offense. So I'll take the over as well. So Giants 7.5. Eric, you go ahead and take this one first.
Yeah, so I mean, just looking it over, I feel like this whole division has a tough schedule playing themselves. You also get like Seattle and San Francisco. I think the whole division gets that division. The AFC East, I believe. So you get the Jets and Bills and Dolphins and Patriots. So it's a tough schedule. The Giants played well last year, so they've got a tough schedule. I'm going under 7.5 wins for the Giants. I love the coaching, but I'm not sold on the passing game. And against other really good quarterbacks and good coaches, I still don't think they're quite there yet. So I would say under. It's a tough line to pick under because I don't think they're a bad team, but I just can't look away from that schedule. I think it's going to be a tough season.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm probably going to go the other way on this. I'm probably going to take the over. I probably shouldn't. But one thing we did talk about before with the Giants is they have some continuity on both sides of the ball in terms of the offense and the defense. The coordinators are staying in place. They did add some talent in the draft. So I do think that this team could threaten to make the playoffs. I don't know that they will, but I don't think 8-9 is a stretch at all for this team. That's all you have to do to beat the over. You could still be 8-9 and hit the over. I'll take that.
Yeah, I agree with that. So Philadelphia, one for sure.
Yeah. Philadelphia 10.5, Eric.
I'm going over. I'm fully bought into this offense. I do think there's maybe some holes to fill on defense, and they'll sort through it. We'll see how that goes. But I'll take this loaded offense, awesome offensive line. That really helps the team's floor. So, give me over. And, I mean, with 17 games now, that's not a crazy number to top. So, over on the Eagles, 10.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think 10.5 is generous. I think it almost feels like a trap. I know that it's going to be a tough schedule. Whenever you go to the Super Bowl, you're going to end up having a tough schedule. So I think that's a reflection of that. But I kind of feel like this team is actually better than the one that went to the Super Bowl last year. So the only concern for me, like you said, is that losing some continuity with the coordinator changes. I believe in the talent on both sides of the ball. I really do. They had one of the more sacks than just about any other team in NFL history last year. Most of those guys are back. Hargrave's gone. But then now you have, like we mentioned, a slimmer Jordan Davis coming in. Hassan Reddick's still there on the other side of the ball. And Sweat, these guys can get after the quarterback. And, of course, Slay and Bradbury are there. They brought in Greedy Williams as a third corner, which I thought was a nice under-the-radar get. So I'm excited for really both sides of this ball. And I think 10.5 to me is very generous. I'm taking the over there. So Washington, 6.5. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Commanders fans. I feel like I've been dumping on them all episode, but I'm taking the under. Again, it's just a tough schedule. You look up and down the schedule, where are their easy wins? You've got Arizona. That's a good start. Denver, mm-hmm. We'll see how they rebound. But then, like, Bears, that's not a bad one. Falcons, they could be a tough team. This division's tough. You got the, you know, just tough divisions on the schedule in general. Even the Rams, that's one of their easy matchups. That's Matthew Stafford, I mean, that could be a decent team there. So I just think there's going to be a lot of games where they have the worst quarterback. We'll see. Maybe the defense takes a step and kind of gets back to their glory days of a few years ago. But I'm going under. It's a low number, so I don't feel great about picking under 6.5 wins, but I'm just going to kind of bet against the situation. I think this team is just primed for firing Ron Rivera and moving on a quarterback and starting fresh next year. So that's kind of what I see for this team.
That's definitely fair, and they do have kind of a murderer's row of a schedule. So even some of their lesser games, like the Rams and the Falcons, are on the road. So that definitely is a concern. So I was initially leaning over, and the more I look at the schedule, I'm thinking that's going to be hard for them to win 7, 8, 9 games. So can it happen? Sure. But I'm not putting my money on the over. And like we said, this is a team that needs to show us something, I think. But from what we've seen so far, I'm not comfortable going over on 6.5.
Yeah. Maybe they, you know, maybe they knock off Arizona and Denver and they start out 2-0 and then we're sweating mm-hmm. that bet. But I just, yeah, it's kind of an unfair schedule for a last place team. Like this is a tough schedule here. So I kind of feel bad for them here. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. That was a really good first division preview here for the NFC East. Good getting back. Again, sorry we've been away for so long, everyone, but you're going to be hearing from us a lot more going forward. So stay tuned for our next episode in the division preview series coming up pretty soon. We're going to, I believe, have some guests on from outside of QB List. We're going to kind of expand our roster here for a little bit for these, get some experts on. So that's going to be great. So until then, you can find us on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days until we all jump to something better. I doubt that anything's going to pull us away. We're going to be here forever, whether we like it or not. But you can follow me at Eric Smith QBL. Drew is at Drew Delaware, and the site is at the QB List. So Drew, I know we've done podcasts together plenty of times, but this was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing these with you a lot more going forward. So good to get back into the groove here.
Absolutely. It's awesome to get back in the saddle. I'm excited for this football season. So look for our Sit Start and What We Saw series on QBList.com. Also on Reddit via the Fantasy Football subreddit once the season starts. And as always, we're available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Thanks for listening.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.